You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
But you also had people that were very fine people.
Very fine people.
On both sides.
And the aliens with mind meld and give them the technology. They're bad aliens.
So
are you surprised the Nazis were influenced by demons?
No, if demons are real, I would definitely think they'd be on the side of the Nazis.
Yeah.
McDonald's is connected to the Clintons. They chop up the bodies and put them into the sausage and hamburgers. People are being cannibalized. Look it up.
And I'm watching CNN talk about this as violent white nationalist protests. We have done everything in our power to keep this peaceful, you know?
It's Pepe's become kind of a symbol.
Welcome to Yeah Nah Passaran, a show about fascism and its gravediggers. I'm Cam Smith.
I'm Andy Fleming.
And this week we are joined by Talia Jane, who is an independent journalist and the main character in some right-wing fever dreams. Thanks for joining us, Talia.
Thank you. Yeah, I love America and patriotism. I just want to be very clear about that. I am a patriot and...
Well, I was going to say, Talia,
Eagles.
it's a little gouge to bring up money, but you first made a big splash in the public sphere, raising the fact that you couldn't make a living wage working in tech in the Bay Area. You've then moved into the lucrative career of independent journalist.
Yeah.
If you wanted to make the pivot into... anti-Antifa sort of whistleblower, which is actually a lucrative career.
Yeah.
Like, shoot your shot now, because after this interview, it's going to be a lot harder,
well,
I think.
What do you think I'm doing here, my man? I mean, not to like, why are you blowing up my whole game? I've got a baby now. I got college payments that are going to be coming like in a couple decades if we're still allowed to go to school. I'm trying to do something. Can we take it from the top? Let's start again. I'm a patriot now, is the thing. I'm not Antifa. I'm anti-Antifa. I hate Antifa. I think they're ugly and smelly. And I love
America.
America? Yeah. they got me all wrong, man. And you want to talk about whistleblowing? Boy, can I blow some whistles. Because I first did that advocating for patriotically, of course, not as a blossoming socialist who would later become an anarchist, patriotically advocating for a living wage among the customer support representatives at a company owned by Yelp. That, and I don't know if people are familiar with any of this, this is why I'm giving the backstory, but it was this $2 billion tech company that was paying full-time customer support reps minimum wage in like the most expensive city in America, where nobody was able to afford rent. A lot of people were living at home. There were people who were fully unhoused working there. We were not allowed to take home snacks that they had plenty of, that other higher-paying engineers and whatnot didn't bother touching because they were going out buying $20 bowls of salad or some bullshit. And so I finally snapped and I was like, this is trash. And then they raised their wages. They fired me and then they raised their wages and they claimed that it was a normal thing that they were planning on doing anyway, which was not true.
You know, these big companies, they're always thinking about ways that they can improve wages.
Yeah. They were really concerned about the cost of living for their customer support reps. And they made that known when I asked if they were going to give me a raise, as they had claimed when I first got started that they might do if I performed well. And they laughed in my face. So it's a good sign. Always a good sign that you've got like a very pro-worker company. Then I got slandered and like attacked by a bunch of really insane right-wing media. And so I was like, all right, well, then I guess I have to go lean into my Jewish roots and control the media. And as part of being a patriot, I'm also like weirdly anti-Semitic towards myself. That's my new thing also. It doesn't make sense, but it also does.
You moved into the world of independent journalism. Could you tell us a little bit about some of the things that you cover?
Yeah, so I primarily cover protests and social movements. I've also researched and monitored far-right extremism and conspiracy theories and disinformation, specifically focused on New York City, because that's where I live, but also monitoring broader trends that way. A lot of my protest coverage is centered in New York City, just because I don't got no money. I can't be hopping around to all these different places because I don't have money. So I don't do that. But if you give me $50,000, I will tell you the name of one of the top Antifas. I can give you. So just putting that out there for anyone reading the transcript or listening in on this, $50K. I give you one of the top. It's a famously very hierarchical or literal actual organization, extremely hierarchical. But I can give you maybe like third tier for $50K, and then I can go cover protests elsewhere. But it's mostly in New York City, and it's mostly not fascists, but sometimes fascists, and they all know me and they love me and they think I control the weather.
Talia, you mentioned conspiracy theories. You found yourself at the center of one. Could you tell us why people think that you are the secret Antifa mastermind of January 6th?
Oh, because I totally am, obviously, because it makes so much more sense that a bunch of Trump supporters emptied out all of their savings to travel to the nation's capital to punch cops and smash windows and scream about 1776 because my boobies are so attractive and I entrance people, and I tricked all of them, thousands of them, into trying to overthrow the government in support of Donald Trump, who is, I'm not going to name the tier, but definitely in the Antifa organization, if you catch my drift. So it's important that we had to get our guy in there. And that, no, but seriously, being a reporter, I had covered the previous protests in DC following calls from local, like Black Lives Matter groups asking for people to come help support and defend and protect DC from these big protests. So I was there in November covering the Million MAGA March, and then in December covering the 10 Million MAGA March. And then those were both the lead up to January 6th. I don't think people really realize this unless they had been reporting and following these spaces. But January 6th didn't happen in a vacuum. It came from multiple previous large-scale demonstrations organized by a slew of MAGA right-wingers with like Roger Stone and Alex Jones in attendance and speaking and all these names that you know involved. And it was almost like they were like each time that they went, they were testing the waters, figuring out where they could go, how the police responded to them, getting a lay of the land, things like that. And then, so when they announced Stop the Steal / Wild Protest, which would become known as J6, it was a multi-day series of rallies and demonstrations. And then the very last thing on their schedule was a rally at the Capitol. And during Trump's speech that morning, I was there covering that, covering the people over at the Ellipse or the big penis monument, Washington Monument. I was documenting people there, and they started to sort of walk down the street, this really big street. I think it was Constitution Avenue. And I didn't know where they were going, but I started following them. And then get to the grass in front of the Capitol, and someone runs by, and he has like a phone, and he screams, "They breached the fence, we're taking the Capitol." And that's when a bunch of people who were kind of lingering around, didn't really know what was doing, all of them started to rush forward. And so I followed them And then I proceeded to document what was occurring. And I was reporting all of this at the time. I also reported out prior to that Proud Boys were self-identifying with orange beanies or armbands. Like, that was their color, because they were told to not be there in Proud Boy colors. And I was also told that they were having lunch near the Capitol. And I reported all of this out. And then I'm reporting on the ground, I'm filming these, like, insane brawls that people are having, like, with the police line that's forming at the, like, the rotunda. And I'm pushing all this out. There's so many people there that I can't really push any footage of what's happening. I can only push out a couple of posts about, like, I'm here and, like, this is what the cops are using. It wasn't until after that I was able to give, like, a rundown of, like, what I witnessed. But, like, I saw all of this. I documented all of it as press. And I've been very public and straightforward about all of that. The only thing that they're freaking out about is that I was wearing a Trump beanie. And that was because in November, when I had first gone to cover these protests, I was assaulted during a brawl between Proud Boys and anti-fascists. And, like, I was wearing full press gear. And it was like I was singled out because I clearly wasn't with the Proud Boy group. And I guess the guy decided like press were okay to punch. And then after that, I think the Proud Boys like released a thing about like don't attack press, but like only Antifa or something. But so like having been assaulted, and then it came to the awareness of Enrique Tarrio, and there was like a fascist, like a weird IP2 streamer who was like roaming around the Proud Boys at the December 10 million MAGA thing, hanging out around them at their hotel. And Enrique Tarrio was convinced that she was me. And he started to, I don't know, taunt or tease her or something. And she was sort of like, what are you talking about? I'm not her. Like, oh. And then apparently she got roughed up because Proud Boys decided that she was me, despite her clearly not being me and also not looking anything like me and explicitly telling them that she's not me and she doesn't know who I am. So it became very clear to me that in order to continue reporting on these things, that I would need to have something that kind of put the alarm, like the alarm sensors, turn those off. So that way then I could just sort of be present in these spaces and not be at risk of being recognized or being hurt. And yeah, so I put on a beanie. And the crazy thing is that if in any other situation, people do not just go by like, oh, this person's wearing the same thing as me, so they're fine. Like, I've never seen that in reporting on like anti-fascist demos. People, like, if people are in block, like they're still like set, like skeptical of each other, or like they can tell when someone isn't someone that they know. Even if they don't actually know each other really well, they can still be like, that person's an outsider. Or with the Palestine demos, they can tell when people are wearing like when they're the cops wearing keffiyehs, like they stand out in some way. Or like, but in the MAGA crowd, you put like a little Trump hat on and you just instantly become invisible. And invisible is crucial to being able to do journalism unimpeded in hostile spaces, being able to blend in and just be a wallflower. And that's what I was. But because of that beanie, which kept me safe, I'm now being accused of organizing J6. And there's a lot of layers of, holy, this is so stupid. But there's also a lot of layers of, holy, they're using this as a pretext to come after leftists and to rewrite reality in their favor. So that's fun. Also, just, I haven't said it yet. I haven't said it in a while. I'm a patriot. I love America. Okay.
Talia, since January 6, Enrique Tarrio and various other very proud boys got themselves into a bit of trouble and went away for a while, but have been exonerated and released. I'm wondering, do you know what's become of that mob since, and are they operating in New York at the moment?
In New York, to my knowledge, not really. But they also, like, so firstly, a lot of them being incarcerated really took the wind out of their sails. But now we don't need to see, because I am one of the fascists now. We as fascists don't need to see organized fascist street gangs in order to exact harm against leftists and marginalized communities. So the need for the Proud Boys no longer exists. The will to operate under them doesn't really exist anymore. I'm not sure entirely why, but it's like a lot of infighting, a lot of just downtime. They're a lot more like sluggish now. A lot of these guys that joined the Proud Boys got into it for like the drinking, the drug use, the like slovenly, like heart disease type of time. They're not like pumping iron and like trying to engineer themselves to live forever. They got into it for that really like the gross like tourist stereotypes of Americans. Like that's their version of patriotism. And it's also mine. I love chili hot dogs because I'm a patriot now.
I have heard this is recruiting, so.
Yeah, that's where they're going, right? Some of them, like, I don't think they would be able to do it regardless. But, like, we don't need to see, like, these specific extremist groups because they have successfully raised the temperature across the board. So that way then your average Trump supporter at this point is not someone who in 2016 he's just got some interesting ideas or I'm just tired of the Democratic establishment. Like the temperature has been raised where transphobia is more commonplace. It's more casual. It's more normalized. And the guy that got that really bad neck injury is really a big part of that, of normalizing and rationalizing all of these like really extreme, bigoted, fascist ideas. So we don't need to see the Proud Boys. Even if they do show up, it's really almost just like for the flair of it. It's just for like the show. It's not, there's no like purpose the way that they used to try to be organized, and they successfully organized the January 6th Capitol riot and incited people there. And like that's why they served time. But like this is not like something that they need to do now. It's not something like you don't need, and it also there's a benefit for them blending in to present these ideas and these extreme positions and this violence as like an organized, cohesive face as a group. It allows for us to isolate them as other. And now they're just being Joe Schmo who's screaming nonsense about like queer people or whatever. And you're like, oh, wow, this is just like a guy in the neighborhood who's got some really intense feelings about this thing, as opposed to this is a far-right extremist engaging in far-right extremist activity. Like it's harder to other them, which makes it harder to other their extreme ideas, which have become a lot more normalized. So,
Talia, some of these extreme ideas we've just discussed, these conspiracy theories that you control the weather and that you're at the center of all things evil, these are things that have been sort of put out there over the years by some kind of out there people who now have a seat at the table at the White House, which is a little bit scary. What did you make of the Antifa round table?
It was honestly hilarious to see who was so excited about getting paid to be there. Like, there are TPUSA people who are like, just big, starry-eyed, like, oh, man, my paychecks are paying off finally. And it's just, like, so transparently in the vein of tell a lie, often enough, it'll become the truth. It's foolish and embarrassing that these are the people that are like being tapped to have any sort of say in the country, but it's also completely in line with this administration. It's not, I feel like if you talk to anybody in any even quasi-leftist space in the country, it's this sense of like, this is crazy and also completely predictable. This is completely on brand. And that's because this is what they've been like working towards. And this is what they have promised that they would do, is that they would go after leftists. They would go after like blue state attorneys general, sorry. And they have made very clear that they're going to manufacture proof in any way possible. And it's been pretty reminiscent of seeing a lot of like the Hasbara propaganda from Israel that sort of like takes something that's truthful and then just completely flips it into nonsense that satisfies like their need for some kind of propaganda. It feels very much like that, where it's like, I covered January 6th in disguise to protect my safety, becomes I organized this and brought people with me to trick patriots in order to help Trump for some reason. But all you need to know is that I was there deceptively and therefore I should be criminalized. And they're going to push that really, really hard until they can convince people, they can find an angle to convince people to buy into it who are not themselves necessarily fascist or would identify necessarily as fascist. And so I think and of course they're going after people who, they make a big show about the word communism. And then you ask someone like what they think about free buses and they're like, sounds great to me. It's creating a boogeyman and they're creating pretexts. And I think that, again, like the running theme for this administration is, holy shit, these people are so dumb, but also in power and can cause a really significant amount of harm. So, yeah, it's like doom spiral. It's like you doom spiral, but also you're laughing. But I mean, it's like an acid trip that's like teetering on the edge of being really bad.
Talia,
but I don't do drugs because I'm a patriot.
Talia, you've also recently witnessed Zohran Mamdani become the potential mayor of New York. What do you make of that situation, and to what extent do you think it reflects any kind of resistance to this emergent fascism?
Well, obviously, as a patriot, this is someone who paid migrants to vote for him. And the truth will come out. We just have to trust the storm and vote for the guy that harasses homeless people on the subway in a red beret in the meantime. No, I think it's very clear. Like, Zohran has a very distinct style that, like, stands out just, like, inherently. Because there's, like, a lot of... We are so badgered by politicians who... There's no authenticity or earnestness to it. And you can have your opinions on what his politics are, but if you actually just like notice how he addresses things, it ends up being very compelling for people. And the things that he has promised to do are very achievable and were done not that long ago, or we've had pilots for these things. So they're not pie in the sky ideas. And it ends up being very clarifying or like it clears the air a lot in a situation that the Adams administration, I don't want to get too like niche, whatever, but like the current mayor is such a shitbag that like day one of his administration, he called the cops on people arguing on the sidewalk. And then day two, he did a tour of a neighborhood in Queens where there was like an anti-Rittenhouse protest that he used to be like, this is why we need more cops. And he's peddled like right-wing disinformation and propaganda about like outside agitators and all this other bullshit. And he's obviously done all this scummy, awful shit. So it's like any level of paying attention to Eric Adams, it's just like acute, like political deception and divisiveness and that slimy, weaselly, like gross, like club promoter type of energy. And then like Zohran comes in and is like, we can make the buses free if we want to. And you're just like, oh shit, are you serious? And he's like, yeah, it's like really easy. And you're like, oh my God, you can. And they're like, we can freeze rent stabilized units. And you're just like, what? You're going to do what? And he's like, yeah, literally the mayor before this kept the rent frozen for like his whole term as mayor. It's just this last guy who keeps on raising it like a maniac. And people are just like, whoa, wait, it could be easy. It doesn't have to be this weird, insane bullshit that like we've been getting subjected to. So, and it's also one of those things where it's like you say the word socialism and people go, ah, but then you actually talk about socialist ideas and people are like, oh, that makes sense, actually. Weird. Like that actually sounds better than what we're dealing with right now. So yeah, I think that I don't know that it's necessarily a response to Trump. It very well could be, but I think it's a response to Eric Adams being so of the Democratic establishment, being very corrupt and claiming to be a Democrat while advocating for right-wing things and platforming right-wing rhetoric and propaganda. And then you've got this guy coming in being like, what if we were just normal? And people are very enthusiastic for that. It's the same way that we saw like with Kamala's campaign early on before they shot themselves in the foot. They were like, oh, those other guys are weird. And people were like, yes, say it like it is. And then they were like, actually, we need to campaign with Liz Cheney. And then they blew up. But like you saw that momentum, that enthusiasm for them on the national stage when they were offering to be these voices of just like, it can just be regular. It doesn't have to be like, we don't have to manufacture mealy-mouthed support for terrible things. Like, we don't have to worry about those big money donors. Like, we can just be decent people. And people went crazy for that. So I think, yeah, I think that's my thoughts. And I think also, I think he's in a good position to win in November, which makes some of the choices that he makes now can be sort of like, who are you trying to pitch this to? Because you can win. But he has this politic of like a big tent, like very kumbaya, like city for everyone type of thing, where he's trying to like cool the temperatures of everything. And I think he'll be successful in doing that. But I also worry that he's going to get hurt, is the word I'll say. Because there are people who are so aggressively like committed to the rhetoric and politics of the current, like the Trump administration.
Well, Talia, we'll have to wrap it up there. Just before we go, though, there is a non-zero chance that someone from Kash Patel's FBI will be listening to this or reading a transcript. And as someone who might want to one day go to America, I'm going to quickly get a denunciation in. Speaking of socialists, there is a group in Australia called the National Socialist Network. They wear all black. It sounds a little Antifa to me.
That sounds disgusting. That sounds so anti-patriotic.
I will give them a quick condemnation. If they ever try to go to America, stop them at the border. Thank you, Mr. FBI man. And Talia, thank you. If people want to find you, you're on Blue Sky at Talia Jane. And people can also find your Patreon. Look up Talia Jane there. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you. And also, what's the phrase? God bless America is the thing also. Important people know that. Kash Patel's FBI.
Well, Andy, that's our show. We'll catch you next week.
Yep. God bless America.
Kafirs are Palestinian scarves, and they're a symbol of support for justice for the Palestinian people. From the traditional black and white kafir to an array of modern designs, explore the range and order online or drop by 3CR during business hours. Wear your support for the rights of Palestinians. Go to kufiyas.org.au. That's KUFIYAS.org.au. 3CR supporter.
Hello there, I'm Virginia from The Gardening Show. What if there was a viable solution to climate change? Treasured Perennials Nursery are sponsoring a screening of Kiss the Ground documentary, exploring how, through our soils, we can stabilise the Earth's climate, restore lost ecosystems, and provide future food security. A mini event with stalls, demonstrations, and a Q&A session. It's going to be at Fernie Creek Horticultural Society, which is in Hilton Road in Sassafras, on November the 15th, 11:30 to 4 p.m. Tickets will be $15.50 through Try Booking. Head to trybooking.com and search for Kiss the Ground. All proceeds, of course, are donated to 3CR. Treasured Perennials Nursery is a 3CR supporter and regularly appear on The Gardening Show.